It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're looking at access to health care now. Governor Evers ordered us to stay at home to stop the spread of COVID-19. And health experts advise stocking up on 2 weeks of essential supplies. The CDC recommends having a 3-month supply of prescription meds on hand during the crisis. And this is difficult for many people. One audit found nearly half of our population can't afford a $400 emergency. So what should the state and federal government be doing to support low-income Americans during a pandemic? Do you work for a charity or a public support program? Have you been able to stay open to provide services? And what services do people need? What are the challenges? We're at 800-642-1234. Donna Friedsam is a distinguished researcher and health policy programs director at the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison, where she leads a team of faculty and researchers evaluating Wisconsin Badger Care. Donna, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good to be with you.
Well, give us an overview. You know, Harvard School of Public Health estimated that 20 to 60% of people worldwide may be infected with the coronavirus. What could this mean for the vulnerable people, the uninsured people?
Well, what this epidemic and pandemic is doing is really highlighting and accentuating all the existing weaknesses that we have in our country and worldwide, really, but I'll focus on the United States and our state, what the weaknesses we have in our existing safety net. So the people, while all of us are experiencing dramatic challenges at this time, the people that who are uninsured and underinsured, who don't have sick leave with their jobs, paid sick leave, or childcare services and the like, are all the more challenged right now. So we have to try to figure out how to make sure that people can get the health care that they need, how people can stay home and take care of their kids who are not in school right now. And this is right now, we don't have the structures in place to make sure that the whole population can do that. So that's really what we're facing at this moment.
In specifically for healthcare, a number of plans in Wisconsin announced they'll be waiving any coronavirus testing fees for their members. You know, so cost of testing may not deter the sick, but it's what happens after that. For people who are uninsured or underinsured, if they get sick, what does that mean?
Right. So I will note that yesterday I saw an announcement that Ascension had said that they're no longer going to charge for any services related to care for COVID-19, both not only testing, but treatment services for their insured population, but also for the uninsured. And that was a really excellent and important thing for that health plan to do and health system to do for our state. And whatever other health systems and health plans are able to do that, that would be very helpful for the uninsured and also for the people in their health plans who face cost sharing that they may not be able to handle. But what we do have in our state, even before this all started, was over 300,000 people who were uninsured, and also most people facing significant cost sharing with their health plans to get the kinds of services that they need in terms of specialty care and hospital services. People face deductibles with their health plans and then co-payments and cost sharing.
And it could be thousands of dollars for those deductibles.
Absolutely. And people need to feel confident that they need to go in and get the care that they need and not have the financial barriers keep them from getting the care that they need. And I think right now this is such an emergency that everyone is going to just need to get that care. And there will be systems put in place for forgiveness of this, of the kind of medical debt or some kind of negotiations on the back end, because we really can't allow this kind of cost sharing to impede people from getting the care that they need. At the same time, like I said, this is really just highlighting the challenges in our health system that we've had all along, with people feeling concerned about the cost sharing that they face when they need to get health care.
So this week marks the 10th anniversary of the passage of the Affordable Care Act, which expanded coverage to around 20 million more Americans. What barriers to access remain at this decade mark for those who are uninsured?
Well, I want to emphasize the Affordable Care Act. First of all, it did do many important things, including reducing the uninsured by about 40% in our state, increasing insurance coverage for about 250,000 people, and also increasing coverage for people's pre-existing conditions and the like. At the same time, because of a number of policy challenges over the years, many people still remained uninsured. So like I said, over 300,000 people in Wisconsin remain uninsured in our state. And also, as you pointed out, many people face high deductibles and high cost sharing with their existing health coverage. So it's both the uninsured and virtually the entire rest of the population with their insurance don't feel a large degree of comfort with their existing health coverage when faced with a crisis. So the uninsured, of course, they face those financial barriers, whether they can get access to care. There's also geographic barriers that are faced in our state by people in rural areas to get access to care, particularly if they need specialty care, intensive care in hospitals and the like. People face linguistic and cultural barriers to get care in the language that they need. But of course, the 300,000 people who are uninsured need to find care that's available to them where they won't, insurance will not be required. And it'll be important for places like Ascension that I noted to extend that care, not only to testing, but also to the services that'll be needed for people who do test positive for COVID-19.
We're talking with Donna Friedsam. She's a health policy researcher at UW-Madison studying access to and financing of health care. Do you have health insurance? Are you worried about the cost if you were to get sick? Do you have access to a primary care doctor in your community? Join in with your situation, your questions about access, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So, Donna, we're seeing droves of businesses closing, of laying off workers. Does that sharp rise there, does that increase the uninsured rate? What does it do?
Absolutely. Well, let me, there's two sides to this. One is all the people who are losing their employment or becoming laid off. Many of them will apply for unemployment benefits, and they may qualify for a couple of different kinds of coverage. They could either, depending on what their household income is, they could apply for Medicaid or Badger Care, or they could apply for coverage under a special enrollment period eligibility through the Affordable Care Act marketplace. And they should be aware of that losing your job does qualify you for a special enrollment through the ACA marketplace. So that is an eligibility option for people. If they have very low incomes, they can qualify for Medicaid or Badger Care. And if their incomes are above 100% of the federal poverty level, they can go to the marketplace and get their premium subsidized by the federal government.
Some people have access to COBRA benefits once they lose their job, but we often hear COBRA is so expensive.
Yeah, COBRA is usually too expensive for most people who are losing their job. Upper income employees may be able to handle COBRA, but it's unusual for people to be able to pay for COBRA when they lose their jobs. Now, that being said, I also want to note that many of the people that are losing their jobs are likely to be people who didn't even have access to insurance coverage to begin with. And what they're actually losing is their wages. And so they're going for unemployment, and they're having multiple problems. They lose their wages. They're uninsured. And they also don't have access to childcare at this time because their kids are home from school. So there's, you know, that the problems are really compounded for these people, or people who are working in the service industry or in our grocery stores, for example, who are continuing to work, who need to have childcare for their kids, or and don't have sick leave benefits. So these are other problems for this class of employees that we depend upon.
So with these compounding problems, you know, the federal government may be on the cusp of passing this $2 trillion economic stimulus, and it includes up to $1,200 checks for adults with an additional $500 for each child in a household. Would that make an impact here? How would the stimulus help low-income families?
So we are hoping, of course, that this is helpful to people. And I don't know the details of what happened in the late hours of last night, so I can't be right up to speed with this, but I can say a couple of things about it. There were improvements made such that it looks like it'll be available to low-income households equally as middle-income households, which is good. The challenge, I think, that exists is that it looked like the money will be more readily available to households who have their bank accounts directly tied for direct deposit to the IRS, and that which are more likely to be middle and upper income households.
Oh, because there are people who are unbanked.
Yes, and those people who had their who were receiving their refund checks through the mail, it may take several months for them to get this money. So that is not helpful to them in this immediate time of crisis. As well, there's a lot of people who don't even file income taxes at all because they don't need to. Their incomes are so low. And so there's I need to understand better what is in this this new bill that's being addressed to see how that might help them.
We have Donna Friedsam as our guide to health policy in America. She is Health Policy Programs Director at the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison. We'll be back with her in a moment on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent, and we're looking at how access to health care and affordable housing and food insecurity all intensified in a national health emergency. According to the Kaiser Family Foundation, in 2018, nearly 28 million non-elderly people lacked health insurance. There was a 2016 federal study that found many people living in poorer neighborhoods during flu seasons were hospitalized in connection with the illness at a higher rate than residents of more affluent places. Have you or a loved one contracted the coronavirus? Have you had to navigate the healthcare system? Do you have health insurance? Are you concerned about the cost if you were to get sick? Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Donna Friedsam leads the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison. And she stays with us. So, Donna, are our healthcare exchanges, is the marketplace prepared for the cost of this crisis?
So the marketplace exists. The ACA marketplace is in place, and people can look to, if they have lost their job or had other change in circumstance, they can look for coverage if they qualify for coverage there, if their incomes are above 100% of the federal poverty level. So if their individual income is above $12,000 a year about, or their household income, it depends on how many dependents they have. But if their family of four's household income is approximately above $23,000 or $24,000 a year, then they can go look for coverage there. And that is available to them. They should call 211 to try to get connected with an enrollment assister, or they can go to healthcare.gov or look for, in Wisconsin, they can go to Covering WI, Covering Wisconsin, to get a healthcare navigator to help them with this process. As well, though, they should look, if they don't have income at all or they have very low incomes, they should look at the state Medicaid program and Badger Care program. Families with incomes below the federal poverty level, all adults, virtually all adults, may qualify for that coverage. And so they should look there as well. I do want to emphasize, though, that there are a number of people that don't qualify for these coverage because of their because they are immigrants or immigration status, and because of new federal rules regarding even legal documented immigrants, new federal rules around public charge. And this has created a real concern around our immigrant residents and whether they can get health insurance coverage and whether they can get the care that they need. So I just, while we probably need a whole nother hour to talk about that, I just want to flag that Wisconsin has a substantial immigrant population, both Latino, Latinx, Hmong immigrant, and others. And these residents of our state have a lot of challenges in getting these available public benefits for various reasons. One of the big challenges right now is that those people are the people who clean our houses, for example. And so right now they have lost their work. So they neither have work nor access to any public benefits.
Let's take a call now. Mike is with us from Milwaukee. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a quick question. You know, I'm old enough to remember there were maybe a dozen hospitals in around the central city of Milwaukee. And there was one by Capitol Court, 60th and Capitol. There was one on like 27th and Highland, 28th and Highland. There was one. There was St. Michael's and Aurora, which owned St. Mike's, tore it down. And that was one of the last hospitals that inner city residents were able to access. And then Aurora threatened to shut down Mount Sinai, and the public rose up and demanded that they keep it open. And I guess they were threatened with the removal of their tax exempt status for being a nonprofit. So that's why they kept Mount Sinai up. So there's this thing about the money involvement in tearing down these hospitals because there were too many beds available. And now we're facing a situation with climate change, and more of these diseases are going to start coming northward. We're going to be dealing with them. We're going to need those hospital beds, and this is a good example.
Mike, thank you for the call about, he's referring to this erosion of inner city safety net hospitals.
Yeah, this is, Mike is bringing up a very complex and challenging problem that we face in our state and nationally, and that is, what is the right capacity for our healthcare system, and where do we best invest our resources? And he's right that we have had challenges with maintaining infrastructure in central cities and in rural areas, and we've had some overcapacity in other areas. So it's been hard for our system and our country to figure out how to balance where to build and where to pull back on building. And right now it feels like we have an undercapacity for where we need to surge our resources. This is a very complicated issue because we can't operate with excess capacity everywhere at all times, but we do need to have the ability to maintain that and handle that surge when it's needed.
Let's bring in Mike. Thanks. Let's bring in Allison now in Racine. Allison, hi.
Hi, I have a more general comment, but still pertaining to the discussion about the overall costs of healthcare. And when we add that into what most Americans pay into their retirement funds, what most Americans contribute to the cost of a university education, when we add all that up, it's probably equal to or exceeds what most people in other countries pay in income taxes. The difference being, their services are guaranteed because they're citizens. Here, we don't have anything guaranteed, especially if you lose your job. It's all gone. So I think people need to start looking at the spotlight that COVID-19 is shining on the very huge deficiencies in our system, and we need to move to something different to have things guaranteed because we're citizens.
Allison, thanks for bringing your thoughts. Donna?
So what Allison is suggesting here is that rather than people pay for their health what I think Allison is suggesting is that rather than people pay for their health care directly through buying their own insurance and the like, that we pay it through our tax system and have a government finance single payer system or something in that manner. And that is an argument that we're going through in this country right now. How is it better? Should we have a higher overall higher tax level and then have government guaranteed health care for all? So that's a debate that will continue to play out over the course of this election. And you'll see different estimates of, you know, what costs more, what costs less. But absolutely, Allison is somebody, or the point she's raising are something that our country is debating heavily right now.
And we have time for Susan in Appleton with thoughts on healthcare. Susan, hi.
Hi. Hey, I was just wondering if the state intends to do anything for people who have individual healthcare policies. These are people who are early retirees who probably saved all their life so they could be retired early before they got to Medicare age or whatever. The bottom line is it's very expensive to get individual health insurance right now. And yes, we keep being told that, you know, you will be able to have individual health insurance. Everybody was able to have health insurance. But when you have individual health insurance, there is no limit at the cost or the premium on the policy. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because we do not know yet if this COVID-19 virus is going to cause any kind of a long-term condition. In other words, will your lungs be weakened or whatever? We don't know that yet.
Susan, thanks. We're short on time, and I want Donna to respond to the ripple effects here and the costs long-term.
There is some indication that because of the increased cost of the healthcare system, that will be felt by increasing premiums over the next year. And it is a concern for everybody what the cost of individual health insurance is. That's really what the individual marketplaces through the ACA were designed to address. And that's where people can go to try to purchase their individual health insurance. Your caller is correct that individual health insurance is very expensive. If people have incomes below 4 times the federal poverty level, or about $100,000 a year for a family of four, they can get federal premium subsidies to help them purchase that individual health insurance. But it does still remain expensive, especially as your income gets higher.
Donna, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Donna Friedsam, Distinguished Researcher and Health Policy Programs Director at the Institute for Research on Poverty at UW-Madison. Just ahead, it's On Point, what it's like to be a nurse on the front lines of the coronavirus pandemic. That's On Point coming up next. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.